everybody. It's Gabby, Communications Director with the Montana Democratic Party and co-host of our newest podcast. Join us weekly as we unpack and demystify the chaos and the excitement that is the Montana legislative session. In this podcast, we'll spotlight important bills, interview lawmakers and stakeholders, and give you all the top lines you need to know and understand news out of Helena. Thanks so much for joining us. Enjoy the show. So we're really excited today to have Minority Leader of the Democratic Party, Pat Flowers, on with us on the Blue Bench podcast. Thank you so much, Pat, for taking time out of your very, very busy, hectic day to chat with us.
Senator Flowers, it's so good to see you. We got to work real closely together last legislative session, and now we have some, you know, different seats. But we're excited to spend a little time with you today and learn about how we can talk a little bit about how this session might look differently than last session, but also I'm just going to dive in with a couple of questions, if that works.
That sounds great.
First of all, there was a big healthcare rally this week in the Capitol. Do you want to tell us how that went and what the focus was on that? I know Medicaid is an issue.
Yeah, I think that was the primary focus of the rally, and I thought it was went really well. It was very well attended, great speakers. I was able to catch a portion of it, not the whole thing. But I think it showed the enthusiasm that we all feel as elected officials for renewing our participation in Medicaid. It's incredibly important, as you know, Shannon, from the last session and previous sessions as we've debated this. Really important for rural health care, really important for just general human welfare in the state. I think there's about 82,000 Montanans who are currently enrolled, and leaving them without health care would be devastating on a personal level. It's also important for just the business community in this state, to so many employees, for businesses who can't be covered by employer health care are covered through Medicaid. And it's an important thing. I like to say it's important on a human welfare level, and it's just important for Montana at a business level and just at a broad healthcare level across the state.
Yeah, I don't think a lot of Montanans realize that 82,000 number is close to, not quite, but close to 10% of Montanans, right? And then, you know, as you mentioned, the economic impact as well, that we're not just talking about people who need their health care, but that we're also talking about businesses staying open. So that's a good point. So, Senator, you mentioned rural and the effects of that. And I think that also, and I mentioned in our earlier podcast, I don't know if this is fair, but I think it's easy for legislators to in earnest forget about rural Montana, since many of us come from the larger populations. And we think a lot about farming and ranching and the importance of supporting farmers and ranchers, but this would have a big impact on those critical access hospitals and clinics. Do you want to add anything to that?
Well, I think Eastern Montana, or folks who live in Eastern Montana, already know the challenges of getting quality health care. Sometimes, even given the current circumstances, they have to drive a long way to get that. And if we lose Medicaid in its current form, we're not able to renew kind of what we're calling expanded Medicaid, they'll have to drive even farther. And it could result in clinics closing. And, you know, in those small communities, every time you lose a service like that, it's not only an issue for healthcare, but it's a part of the community, and it's a business in a sense in the community. So it would be devastating to rural Montana if we lose expanded Medicaid.
Okay, so let's shift gears here and talk a little bit about taxes. It's a hot issue for this legislative session. And I know that specifically property tax is an issue. Senator, can you tell us a little bit about what you're expecting to see the Democrats prioritizing as far as property taxes go or any of the tax structure?
Yeah, I would say along with renewing Medicaid, property tax is right at the top of our list of priorities. And we have a couple flagship bills that actually have already been introduced. We worked on them during the interim, and we made a point of getting those introduced in the first week of the session so we could put this issue front and center. We think we've got a good solution coming from the Democrats. The first piece is being carried by Representative Thane out of Missoula, and that bill creates basically a tiered system of taxation that's linked to the component value of your home. So, for example, the first $50,000 of value of your home, we are exempting entirely from taxes. And then the next, I think it's $50,000 to $500,000, we're taxing at, I believe it's 1%, and it kind of builds from there. The tax rate gets higher as the value of your home gets higher. And the reason for that is we wanted to ensure that the benefit of a new property tax code would target lower and middle income Montanans who are feeling the weight of the skyrocketing property tax the most. And we believe our tax proposal does that. The other kind of flagship tax bill is being carried by Representative Carlin, also out of Missoula. And Shannon, you'll recall from last session, your bill, at that time we were called the Circuit Breaker Bill, and we've rebranded it a bit, but it's a very similar concept. And Senator Carlin carried something very similar in the last session also and actually made it to the floor. And that bill would provide an income tax credit for lower income Montanans to offset their property tax burden. So the lower your income level, the higher the income tax credit you would get to offset those property taxes. And Representative Carlin also has a component in there that would pass down some of this credit to renters. So, you know, I would say probably almost a majority of people in Montana still rent rather than own their homes, and yet they don't get the benefit of any of these property tax cuts per se. Yet they feel the weight of them because those taxes are passed on to them by their landlords typically. So as Representative Carlin's bill recognizes that fact and accounts for renters in a way that they'll also feel the benefit of a tax cut.
That's awesome. That's so huge for renters in Montana.
Yeah, that's great.
Absolutely.
And Senator Flowers, I have a question on behalf of many of my non-tax bonk friends on X. A word I'm seeing a lot as I doom scroll is homestead. Do you mind explaining what that means to some of us who are really interested in tax policy but don't really know the terminology?
From the Democrats' perspective, we define a homestead exemption as a portion of the value of your home that is not taxed. And we also have in Representative Thane's bill, which I think is House Bill 155, a component that is targeted at small businesses. And we're calling that a Comstead exemption, so commercial stead exception, that would take the first $200,000 value of your commercial property and exempt that from taxes. So that's the, I think that is the proper kind of tax vernacular. The governor's proposal that came out of his property tax commission that worked over the last couple of years, they also have, quote, a homestead exemption, but it is a lower rate rather than an absolute exemption. So we argue that we have the true homestead exemption and they have a faux homestead exemption, but regardless, that's how we're both using the term.
And it's also
studies that use the term slightly different.
There's also an element of that being the home you live in, as opposed to a second or third or fourth home.
Correct.
Right.
Very helpful. Thank you for that clarity.
You bet.
Okay, anything else? I know that at the very beginning of the legislative session, day one, we heard you speak of, there was a press event, and we heard you speak about schools, supporting our strong public schools. We also heard a lot about housing, which, you know, this is the property tax certainly directly relates to housing. What are you seeing so far in housing, in addition to property tax? Is there any legislation of concern? Go ahead.
The way we're describing our circumstances right now, and coming from Gallatin County, this is very real, and that is we have an affordability crisis. And I thought it was really interesting, actually, that the governor used similar terms. And I think on that point, we agreed. There is an affordability crisis in this state, and it really starts with housing. And so we've had some opportunity in Gallatin County, and I know in other parts of the state, to build some affordable housing using federal income tax credits, low-income housing income tax credits. There is a proposal coming to do something similar in the state to create a state low-income housing tax credit. That's being championed by the Housing Coalition as one of their priorities, and that's something that we support. I have not seen that introduced yet. But that can, as we learned in Gallatin County, that can be used to kind of complement what they call the capital stack that's needed to produce the development. And sometimes they have a gap that they need to fill, and it's sometimes not a huge gap, but it is a gap. And that's a place where that state low-income housing tax credit can really be the difference between a low-income housing project moving forward or not. So that's one piece that we're really hoping we can get across the finish line and work with the Housing Coalition to make that happen. And of course, our folks across the aisle as well. I know that Senator Fern is once again bringing his multifamily housing coal trust program back and trying to infuse more money into that. That's also basically a source of a loan source for developers so they can also build low-income housing. My understanding is there's going to be another proposal also being championed by the Housing Coalition to fund an existing housing trust that is found in Department of Commerce and but has never been funded, and to put some money in there also for another source for low-income or low-interest loans for developers to develop affordable housing. So those are three of the pieces that I know are there. I'm sure there are other ideas that are coming forward in this session. I think there's pretty broad recognition that it's an issue, I think, across the aisle as well. I think we have different views on how to address it or to address it at all.
Senator Flowers, you know I'm going to bring up a topic that's very close to my heart. I would love for it to always be at the front and center, and actually it basically is. Montana Democrats fight very hard for our strong public schools, and curious what you're seeing right now early in the legislative session, if you have any predictions or if you have any thoughts on how we can support our kids by supporting our teachers and our schools.
There is a fair amount of talk right now about school funding, and obviously we have the centennial study coming up to look at school funding. Is that what it's called, Shannon?
Decennial. It's a 10-year.
Yeah, it's a 10-year look. But I think there's also some interest in making some changes now to create additional funding for schools that are feeling the weight of inflation and are struggling to kind of keep their school districts afloat. And so I think there's on both sides of the aisle interest in that. We'll see how that develops over the course of the session. But I think there's honest interest across the aisle as well. I think the as I understand it, the Republicans have really focused their interest on the STARS Act. And as I understand it, that focuses more on new teachers and new teacher pay. And we also are trying to broaden that conversation to address the pay of existing teachers. You can't really raise the lower end, so to speak, which absolutely has to be done, without addressing the rest of the pay scale. Otherwise, you start dropping them off the other end because they can't have stagnant wages or wages that are so far below a living wage and expect them to stay in the job. So we're trying to broaden that conversation, and hopefully we'll find some partners on the other side of the aisle that recognize the need for that too. As you know, Shannon, I'm also a big supporter of public education. My kids went through public schools, got a great education there in Bozeman, and it's frightening to me to see how they're struggling just to keep teachers when I know the quality and the of teachers that my kids were fortunate to have and the commitment that I saw from those teachers every day. And we need to hold on to that. It is such an important thing, not only for our kids, but once again, this is a business issue. If you're going to try to attract and hold businesses in this state, we have to have quality education, because people don't want to move to a state that has a terrible public education system, because that's where most kids go to get their schooling. So it's an incredibly important issue, and it's so foundational. I don't need to tell you how important it is. You've been preaching to me too for the last several years on that, and certainly influenced me. So yeah, education funding, huge priority for us. Teacher pay, huge priority for us. And we're going to fight hard every day to make sure we gain some ground on that and hopefully stabilize our public school system.
That's wonderful. Thank you, Senator Flowers. Yeah, we've seen out of about 10 to 12,000 teachers in the state total, depending on, you know, counselors and administrators, we've seen a decrease in about 1,000 teachers per year over the course of the last few years. And so many of those of our recent college graduates who have teaching certificates, they're just going out of state because they can, instead of making $35,000 a year, they can make $50,000 a year in Oregon or Idaho or wherever it might be. And I know you know this, but so I commend you and other legislators for tackling this issue, and I'll be curious to be watching it from afar. And I know many, many, many people, parents and teachers and all sorts of folks alike, will be curious about it.
For sure.
So I'm just going to kind of hand you one last thing, Pat, before we sign off. So Senator Flowers, you're in such a unique position as the minority leader, because I feel like legislators, for the most part, are pretty specialized based on our committees, right? But you're in this position of being very generalized, because as from my perspective anyway, watching you work last session, you had to know what was going on all the time everywhere as best you could, and which is absolutely fascinating, and thank you for that service. And is there anything else that you're seeing happening that we might not know about, or we haven't seen in the press that you'd want to share?
Absolutely. I think another piece of this affordability crisis that I talked about earlier is childcare. And in the last session, Shannon, how focused we were on that as an issue. And we made some headway with Best Beginnings. And we think there's lots more to be done there. And I think we're going to see some important movement on that. There's been some discussion about a child care trust that would be able to be, number one, sustained in the long term. So the corpus would be maintained and we'd be able to take the proceeds from that trust, invested trust, and use it for things like startup costs for new child care resources, possibly raise the income qualification for Best Beginnings so you could make more money and still qualify. Representative Carlin has a really interesting bill to allow for child care workers to qualify for Best Beginnings simply because they're working in that field. And that would be a huge recruitment tool, I think, in getting more child care workers. And because most of them, I think about my niece owns a child care facility in Gallatin County, and I know what a struggle it is to find employees for, and she's got great employees. She's running a great preschool, but it is a struggle. If she had that in hand, where if you come to her school as a teacher, your child should be there and you would qualify for Best Beginnings assistance, regardless of the income that your husband or partner brings to the table, it would really be significant. So that's another one that's out there. I think I'm really excited that we're going to make some headway, more headway on this issue in this session. And so I'd say look for that in the coming weeks.
Well, that's music to, I think, a lot of people's ears. I think a lot of folks know if a child, especially a child who's at risk for whatever reason, poverty or any family issues, you know, they're significantly more likely to be kindergarten ready if they have the high quality childcare. And if we can have our children kindergarten ready, it changes the game for everyone. So I won't go into that too much, but that's great. I'm delighted that I'm grateful that you chose that one. All right.
Absolutely.
Well, thank you so much for joining us, Senator Flowers.
Thank you for having me. It's been a pleasure talking to you both, and always nice to see your smiling faces.
What do we have on the docket for next week?
Well, next week, Wednesday, January 22nd, is actually an anniversary. It's the anniversary of the Roe v. Wade repeal. And so we wanted to do something special for that show. We'll be interviewing Executive Director of Planned Parenthood, Martha Fuller, next week. And we'll be talking about the state of abortion in Montana and what its future looks like post passing CI 128, which, of course, enshrined abortion into the Montana Constitution. And we'll be talking about also what's at stake in Washington. What happens if Congress presents us with a national abortion ban? What does that mean for CI 128 in Montana? What does that mean for the fate of abortion in the country? So we'll be asking Martha some of these questions. And of course, we'll be discussing happenings in the Montana legislature. I'm sure we'll have tons more to talk about.
We'll also be having this week, next week, or the week after, Minority Leader in the House, Katie Sullivan, who's going to share some perspectives there. And so stay tuned. It's going to be some interesting conversation.
Thank you again, guys, for joining us for our second episode of Blue Bench Podcast. Be sure to follow us on our social media channels. We're Montana Dems on X, Instagram, and Facebook. Shannon, what are your socials?
Shannon for Montana on Instagram, and I'm Shannon Louise O'Brien on Substack. And I've just started Blue Sky as well, so look out there.
Actually, we have a Blue Sky as well. I forgot about the Blue Sky. Thanks again, everyone, for listening. We'll be in your feed next week.